Welcome to CrimeWire, the place for information, news, and most importantly, justice. I am Kim Colton, your host. Our interactive website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call in anytime during the show. The number is 1-646-478-0982. Or you can participate in tonight's show simply by going to the live interactive chat room here on Blog Talk Radio. If you are a friend or a family member and would like to send CrimeWire information on an unsolved or suspicious death case, or have a specific crime-related topic you'd like to have discussed on a future show, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. My special guest tonight is Monica Kaysen from the Q Center for Missing Persons. And later in the show, the family of James Aaron Toole, who has been missing from Alabama since 1995, will be featured here on CrimeWire. Monica, are you with us?
I am. Thank you for having me.
Great. Thank you, Monica. Let me see here. In her 18-plus years as an advocate, Monica Kaysen has seen it all. The car stereo owner who staged his disappearance to avoid creditors, the 9-year-old boy missing for 4 months before being found dead, tucked into a suitcase and stashed behind a drugstore, the killer who sent her a map pinpointing the location of his last victim. All those cases drew a focused response from Kaysen's Wilmington-based nonprofit, the Q Center for Missing Persons, a sprawling network of volunteers whose growth in recent years is underscored by its rapidly expanding reach across the country. But the organization was not always this big. The tragedy that lifted Q from obscurity to mainstream was the disappearance of Peggy Carr, a 32-year-old kidnapped at random by two men in a parking lot outside a city shopping center in April 1988. I will stop there and introduce Monica to the show and let her continue the story. Monica, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It was 1998 with the Peggy Carr case.
Oh, okay,
and
1998.
Yeah. And it was we had already been in existence for 4 years prior to that, but we had done a lot of smaller cases, focused really a lot on if you became missing in North Carolina or from North Carolina. So even though we were working with some other states, pretty much everything had a tie to North Carolina. And it truly was the disappearance of Peggy Carr that kind of turned everything around, because she was originally from Ohio and was abducted in broad daylight by two people that were released early for good behavior from prison. And they went on a week crime spree, of rape and murder and robbery and what have you. And she ended up just being a victim of really just their path, if you will. And for 7 months and 10 days, our organization was put to a lot of challenges, but also at the same time helped us grow and basically modified of who became and what we were able and capable of doing, learning a lot just from that case alone, from working with investigators to what the families needed behind the scenes, as well as the active searching that we were, hosting and participating in for her. And that's pretty much how that case involved us into a national center, because after that we became known, on a national level, and the requests for help were coming from all over. And our board of directors decided that we would, take an organization that was solely committed to North Carolina initially and, change our goal plan and our final mission. And that's when we became a national center.
Oh, it's wonderful. I love every time I get on your website and I read about everything you do, it's just fascinating. And Monica, I have to say, I apologize for the way I sound tonight. I've got some allergies, and I apologize to my listeners also. But so my voice sounds a little funny. But Monica, we're gonna jump right over to the James Aaron Toole case. On the phone with us right now tonight is Ashley and Amanda, the granddaughters of James Aaron Toole, who's been missing from Alabama since 5/15 of 95. Welcome, Ashley and Amanda, to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us, Monica. And Monica, you
know these gals.
Yes. Yes. And they can tell you all about their missing person, but we are going to be featuring him on our national upcoming road tour. We're going to be doing a stop for him to highlight his case and hopefully generate some new interests and tips and begin working, to try to get cases just like his out there, back out there. We'll feature 109 cases this year. We also have a few unsolved homicides as well as unidentified persons, but majority of our cases that we feature on the National Road Tour every year are missing persons and also persons that haven't gotten a lot of attention or that cases have gone cold. So we're very excited, and we're going to, we've got all these rally stops. We were counting last night. We're almost up to 30 rally stops, and we're going to be on the road for about 10 days. So it's going to be a whirlwind of trying to get these cases out there and bringing forth the national awareness that we do every year, and looking forward to that stop. Absolutely.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And at the end of the program, Monica, let's talk a little bit more about that, because everywhere you're going to be going and such. Now, James, missing from Pansy, Alabama, he's classified as endangered missing white male. His age at the time of disappearance was 72. His height is 5'7", weight 160, eyes gray, hair gray. Scars, marks, tattoos. He has a brown cancer spot, size of a dime, on right forehead at hairline. Tattoo of girl in swimsuit on right arm. The clothing he was wearing was button-down shirt with possibly wearing a brown cowboy hat. Traveling in a 1984 four-door Chevrolet Cavalier, tag number 38, B as in boy, L as in Larry, T as in Tom, 66. Car has not been found. Full name, James Aaron Toole. And Ashley or Amanda, whichever one would like to speak, whichever one of you gals, tell us about your grandpa, for one thing, I'd like to hear, and what happened, the details of the disappearance.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Were you real close to your grandpa?
Yes, we were really close. He wasn't our biological grandfather. He married my grandmother when my dad was 13. He's kind of the only dad that my dad ever knew, and he's really the only grandfather that we ever knew. But, I mean, biologically, he's not our grandfather, but,
he is, though. He is in your heart and in your family and everything.
Right. We were very close to him. So, the last time we saw him, I was 12 at the time, and I would get off the school bus at his house. And at the time, my sister, who was 16, she was in a different school, so she would come by to pick me up at his house. And that day he told us that he was going to visit a family member in Florida around the Plant City area where all his family lived. He had a relative that was sick, so he was going to go down and visit them, and that she needed to make sure she was there on time, the next day to pick me up so that I wouldn't be there by myself. And so we were like, okay, and went on about our business. And then later that night, my sister and I and my mother visiting a friend who lived down the road from him, a good little bit down the road from him. And we saw him driving the opposite direction. And we assumed that he was going to visit his wife and his daughter that lived down the street from him, to say the same thing, that he was going out of town to visit a family member that was sick. And then, a couple days passed, my parents didn't hear from him, no one called to say that he'd made it safely or that he was back home or nothing. So they got concerned and called his sister, my Aunt Irene, who was the sister. She's still living in Plant City, to say, did Aaron make it there? Is he okay? Is everything okay? You know, who was sick? And she said that she didn't know he was supposed to be coming to visit. She didn't know anyone that was sick at the time. And by this time, it had been, you know, it had been a couple of weeks. It had been a week or so. And so my parents immediately called the sheriff's department and had a missing persons report done.
The following Sunday.
And that was, I mean, that's about it. That's all that we really know. His car has never been found. He had his important medicines. He had just had some eye surgery. His medicine was still at his house. Most of his belongings that he obviously wouldn't have went away, you know, without them, was still at his home.
So when your mother saw him again that night, when he passed her going north on Houston County Road 75, you all just assumed he was going to Florida. It just makes me wonder that if he just had eye surgery, unless this family member was really sick, he would probably postpone that trip. And of course he would pack his belongings if that's where he was, and his medication.
Mm-hmm. Well, the eye surgery had been, I mean, he was post-op. He could drive. Everything was good. He was still taking, you know, some of the post-op medicine, just, I guess, to make sure that he wasn't going to get an infection or anything. But mm-hmm. he had been told not to drive at nighttime, not in the dark. And then when we mm-hmm. saw him, it wasn't dark time. But
we kind of assumed maybe that he was leaving the next day, but he was just making sure everybody knew where he was going to be. So I don't think we assumed that he was leaving that night. When we passed him, we assumed that he was going to see my aunt. My grandmother was staying with my aunt at the time. We do know that he did go there. My cousin, she was the same age as me at the time. I was 16. She was almost 16. She said that she heard him come in, and they were kind of fussing a little bit, arguing at the time, and so she didn't want to come out and get in the middle of it, so she didn't actually come out and say goodbye to him, but that's the last time she saw him. So we're assuming that that's where he was going when we passed him, but the last time
you're,
we had...
Okay. You're, sorry, so you're ahead. Assuming he was going to your aunt's?
Yeah, not actually out of town just yet.
I see what you're saying. Can you tell me how far away is your aunt to where you saw him on County Road 75? Like, how far, what kind of distance are we talking?
She? Yeah, it wasn't far at all. Maybe, I mean, at the most, 2 miles. I mean, he lives on 75 across the street from a little store called Brunson's, which is where he also worked at the time. And he basically would walk back and forth to the store. And then my aunt lives just down the road a little bit on 75.
Maybe about 5 miles, almost to 84. So it wasn't a long distance at all.
Right. And your aunt said he never came there.
No, she didn't say that. I never spoke with my aunt about where, if she saw him or not, but I do know my cousin who was there. My grandmother was there at the time, too. So my cousin and my grandmother were both there. My cousin was in her room, and she heard him come in. And I think he called for her a few times, and she just didn't want to come out, you know, and so she didn't see him that day, but she did hear him in the house.
Okay, I get it now. It's all coming together.
Our aunt, his sister, our Aunt Irene, she is his sister, and that's who my parents called to say, you know, to see how he was doing, because they knew that he would stay with her when he arrived in Plant City, and she's the one that said that he never made it, and that she didn't know he was supposed to be coming. I'm sorry.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. And was there really a sick family member?
That's the confusing thing. My Aunt Irene said that she wasn't aware of it. I know that my uncle or his brother, Uncle BJ, had cancer, so he was always kind of sick. So she wasn't really aware of anybody contacting him saying that somebody was sick. Now, I do know personally that he did say that he was going down there to see a sick family member because he said it to me. Because I got there a few minutes before my sister got off the school bus, and we talked for a little while, and he mentioned that he was going. That's when he said, you need to make sure that you're here to get Ashley because I won't be here. So she won't be here by herself. So he actually did say that they called him. Now, I don't know if they ever got phone records. I mean, it would be nice if they had them. But, of course, it's too late to get phone records now. But,
And he was missing for about a week or two before you realized he was even missing.
Well, no, more like a week.
A week. Okay.
Yeah. It was the day after Mother's Day when he left. On Monday when he said he was leaving. Now, I don't know if he actually left that night or if he left the next day, but I don't think anybody saw him at all the next day. From everybody that I know of, the last time they saw him was on that Monday, that night.
Sister's house, which was 5 miles away. Okay.
Yes. Okay, going to his daughter, well, his stepdaughter, basically. It was my grandmother, his wife, they had gotten to an argument the night before, and she went and stayed with my aunt.
Her daughter.
That's why she was at the house and heard him.
And that's why he had went to visit and tell them that he was going to visit his family in Plant City so that people would know where he was.
Okay. And although you never asked your aunt directly, your grandmother and your cousin said, yeah, we heard him. Your cousin was in her room, but, yeah, they did hear him, and they were exchanging words in a way.
Yes. According to my cousin, my grandmother and grandfather were kind of arguing a little bit, which wasn't abnormal. I mean, that's not.
Right. Exactly. Okay.
The thing that I find most interesting is the vehicle's never been found. And you know, when law enforcement, you know, early on, before cell phones and all that, they do a live check, you know, for Social Security, driving license, see if anyone's renewed, that type of thing. And from all accounts that I have in the file, that, you know, there hasn't been any kind of activity. So it's like, you know, it appears that he's almost vanished off the face of the earth for all these years. And, you know, it's crazy that, you know, 1995 until now.
Right. Monica, do you think that I don't know that area. Do you think, is there a body of water where he could have perhaps drove into? And I'm wondering if there is a body of water, did they dredge it or... Look,
I don't know of any. I don't have any of those records as far as if they've conducted any searches or, and the girls might be able to tell you that because we got the case not long ago and we just started digging our heels into it as far as.
I see.
And what we see in the case is first there has to be brought forth back in awareness to get the case up to date, make sure they've been entered into CODIS, make sure you know that he's in, you know that the correct information is in NCIC and these type of things. So that's where we're at. As far as trying to rebirth the case and get the information back out there, hoping that somebody or people will come forward with new information or information validating, you know, whatever the police are thinking. So we're like at the beginning stages of trying to rebirth this case, and that's why it's important, you know, for them to get out and start talking about it again because so many years have passed. I'm sure there have been people even passed away that might have been helpful. So it's like you have to kind of review and start all over again. And then, you know, and the uphill battle that we have is that, you know, back then cell phone, you know, we weren't going off the pings. We weren't going off a lot of things. A lot of things were sightings, a lot of things were, you know, possible bank transactions that may have occurred back then. And even then, they weren't very active. Police weren't very active, in especially in adults, in getting bank information and things of that sort of anybody, because that just wasn't a common tool that they used.
Right, right. And Ashley or Amanda, what about a body of water? Do you? I know you were very young at the time, but do you know if anything, if there's a body of water near there or if they searched it?
Well, there is a large body. The Chattahoochee State River is, I mean, maybe like there's a landing maybe 15 minutes from where he lived. And the thing about the Chattahoochee State River is, you know, my sister and I, when he went missing, were very young. We didn't know what to do. And just here recently, mm-hmm. we've started doing stuff with it and taking it on. And we don't know what we're doing. We are completely lost, and this is all new to us. So we are, you know, we just sort of found out about Q, and we've got in touch with Team Waters, Mr. Dennis, who came.
He actually came and helped the, well, he worked with the Houston County Police Department, and they did a sonar of the river. Where did they do it from?
Wilson's Landing.
From Wilson's Landing to the Gordon Landing, and they weren't able to find his car. They were able to find actually another car, but they have, I believe they dredged it before in the original investigation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then this time we were able to bring in Team Waters to help us, you know, look with their equipment. And again, we didn't find his vehicle. They did find, a stolen vehicle. And I believe they're going to try to come back again if they can work with the Houston County Sheriff's Department and try to do it again, maybe in another area. So, and I think there is... There is another body of water. It's a pond, and it actually is. It was behind a friend of ours' house. It's a pretty big pond, but I don't know. They haven't searched that either.
It's private property.
It's private property, but it's a pretty big pond. So, but those are the two bodies of water, and then of course Ufala, but I'm not sure. They were going to look in there.
I can understand. Believe me, I know. My hats are off to you gals, and God bless you for picking up this baton. It's going to be a bumpy road, and there will be times where you're just exhausted and just think, okay. But if you let it go for a couple of months and down the line, a year or two from now, you'll pick it up again. Never lose faith, okay? I just think what you're doing is tremendous, you really, and your grandpa would be so proud of you, I'm sure.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And hats off to Team Waters, too. That's pretty neat that they, an organization
right.
that'll come in and do that. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And once we get into the case and identify what has and hasn't been done, we have search teams all over, and we have all capabilities of going in and you know, conducting searches and whatnot. But I would like to, like I said, we're just getting the case. Probably had it for a couple months now.
Right.
You know, and identify what really may need to be done, because if you've got, you know, a higher radius, and actually getting into the day that he was last seen and building a solid timeline, and then deducting time off of it and seeing what happened and those type of things, you know, all of that's going to help. But in addition, you know, the case has to be updated. There's a lot that has to still be done. So with them just, you mm-hmm. know, starting and picking up the torch, you know, it's just another, it's another statement of how missing people long term will affect the next generation. I just spoke about this. That, you know, I've even had children come back after their parents are deceased and, you know, and try to pick up the torch of, you know, a grandparent or a loved one or uncle or whatnot being missing. I mean, missing people continue to affect, you know, the children, the loved ones left behind, but also other generations coming in too, because it just doesn't go away. So we're hoping that, you know, once we get the case
right.
together and build a new awareness, that it's going to also help move that case along as well.
I understand what you're saying exactly. I am personally working on a case of a murder victim from 1972, and so that goes way back. And they didn't all the evidence, all the reports were destroyed or lost, and the detectives and the police that were, you know, the lead detectives are all deceased. So let me tell you, it has been an uphill battle, but you gals, I wish you all the best, and I understand what you're going to be going through. You're welcome. Now, I have another question, though. How far away, I don't know the geographics where you're at, but did he often visit these families, this family in Florida? I mean,
yes,
was that something he would do?
Yes, ma'am, it was. I mean, they were his brothers and sisters, and they were all very, very close. And he originally, you know, we all are originally from around the Plant City area. So when we moved to Alabama, he still went pretty often to visit his brothers and sisters and to see them. And he still, you know, he has one living sibling left. And she...
Oh, wow.
She wants to know what happened.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I understand. I understand. And how far of a drive is that, sweetie?
It's about 6 hours.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
But he was used to doing it, and it was.
Yeah, I mean, it was a common thing. It wasn't a trip that he had never taken before. He'd taken it many, many times.
Right. Right.
So.
Monica, do you have, what else can we add to this? You know, Ashley and Amanda, how is it working with, I see her, I want to also say this, if anyone listening has anything, a tip they can give, please contact the Houston County Sheriff's Department at 334-677-4888. And again, that's 334-677-4888. And this question goes out, my next question goes out to Ashley, Amanda, and Monica. Monica, I know you're new, you're just getting into this, but has anybody talked to the County Sheriff's Department and maybe the lead investigator? Is this still an open case?
Yes, ma'am, it is. And about a year ago, we had the newspaper here do up an article for us. It was on the front page. It was beautiful and wonderful. And we had some people, you know, coming forward after that and talking to the sheriff's department. And, you know, people, it's a very small, small, small community. So everybody knew about him and everybody knew that he was missing, still knows he's missing. So they even would contact us, and we had some people come forward with some tips and some new leads, but we haven't been able to know how those leads have panned out.
That's something we'll handle because when families register with our organization, they fill out a packet, and part of that is advocacy, where we advocate for the victim. And in this case, you know, in any case, we will contact law enforcement once a caseworker is assigned. We have to kind of get goals planned for the case, and then we assign a caseworker. They'll go down there, sit down with law enforcement, basically come out of there with a search date and a plan in action. But there, we'll have to have our ducks in a row prior to going, so we know what we're requesting from them, you know, to make sure the case gets updated. And these are things we'll work with the family to establish as well. And then when we set up that meeting, we'll go in there like an hour before, and then the family will come in, and we'll finish up the meeting with that. And that's something we do in every case. So, you know, this has to take place, but because we're getting ready to do the road tour, I felt it's important to go ahead and put him on the tour, get an awareness. You know, I'll probably stop in and introduce myself to law enforcement while I'm in the area, and then a caseworker will come back down and we'll start from there. Because I think, just like this case and every case, I think it's all solvable, but you have to work it and you have to get good information and you've got to come up with a plan. And those are the things that, right, you know, that's where we're at right now. So,
and,
you know,
and
this
that's
part of, go ahead.
No, please finish.
No, I was saying that this is a part of, you know, starting to create that awareness and getting the information out there and whatnot, because honestly, there's really nothing out there on him but a story here and there. There's no, you know, and back in the 90s, they did a lot of file dumping, and especially in like 97 and 96. And so I'm afraid that, you know, maybe some things have been lost. So that's what I need to sit down and discuss with, you know, law enforcement, exactly what has been done, what search efforts took place, bring me back to the day he got missing, and then let's move forward from there in how we can recreate the new interests and new plan to see if we can't solve this. And, you know, if he did go to, you know, if he really did go to Plant City, you're talking a long period of hours, and you need to, we may need to get out and ride those routes and start looking at areas of what, and then too, if he's not encoded, he could have already been located and be a John Doe somewhere. So, you know, there's just a lot of questions that still aren't answered and that haven't been answered. So, you know, we're going to move along with this, but again, you know, is creating the awareness to let people know he's missing, because a lot of these cases have fallen so cold or so out of the media or never even got that media attention. And, you know, you can, like I said, when you did the newspaper article, a few people came forward. Well, if there was a constant about missing people out there constantly every day, you know, people are going to call in. Well, what are they doing with that information, too? We keep asking people, oh, please help. Call if you know something. You know, what's being done about those type of things as well?
Oh, exactly. Exactly. And kudos to you, Monica, and the Q Center, because this is exactly the route that you need to take. And Ashley and Amanda, I am so glad you contacted Monica, because even though files may be lost or expunged, you could still find, I'm sure the investigators that were on the initial case could still be talked with. And that's, you know, because your case and the case I'm working on are so similar. And, I mean, the whole thing, where visiting relatives and went and left and nobody's, you know, it's very similar. But in my case, nobody's alive. In your case, there's got to be someone still there. And I'm just so glad you are taking up this torch, both of you young ladies.
And I do want to put for people like Monica, sorry, but, you know, speaking from personal experience, we, you know, having just taken this on, we didn't know where to go. And then there's wonderful people like the Q Center and everybody, Team Waters, that are out there that are willing to take, you know, their time and their equipment and their money and their time away from their family to help us. And we, you know, here we are, we don't know what to do, where to go, and there's wonderful people like them out there that know what to do and know where to go and what to do and are there to help us.
Well, I appreciate
Amen.
That. And I do want to add, too, that on our website, every missing person has their own profile, which is www.ncmissingpersons.org. And if you click
Excellent.
On his profile, there is a form on there with all the contact information, but there's also a form for anonymous tipsters if they want to email, you know, and remain anonymous as well. So I do want, you know, and our 24-hour line is 910-232-1687. So there are other ways if someone's comfortable in contacting law enforcement. Those tips will go to law enforcement. Remain anonymous, and we are true to that word on that.
And Monica, could you just give that website one more time and the number?
NC, as in National Center, ncmissingpersons with an S, .org, and you just click on his name or his picture on the profile. It'll bring you to his individual profile with all of his information, as well as law enforcement contact information. And then on the
Excellent.
Bottom, there's an anonymous tip form that you can fill in and submit right there, or you can reach our 24-hour line, which is 910-232-1687.
167?
Nope, 1687.
Oh. Okay, got it. Okay, fantastic. I got that up in our chat room, and folks can click on those link and be directed to the Q Center. What else, Monica? There is one thing I wanted to ask Ashley and Amanda about psychics. Do you know if anyone contacted, because you were so young, but do you know if anyone contacted any psychics or maybe what the outcome of that was?
We've been told that during the initial investigation, there were two separate psychics brought in at two separate times, and they both supposedly said that he was in the river, which is the river that we've, that Team Waters came in and did for us, and that they've had dredged before during the first investigation. And we've been contacted by some people through our Facebook page for our papa, but I guess we're a little skeptical sometimes about people that just, that just come out of nowhere, that we don't know their background, we don't know that they're there, and we don't know their, if they're really, we don't really know their intentions. So I guess it makes us a little nervous.
Right.
It does.
Right. It would me too. And you have a Facebook page, so let's get that out there too. What is the, name of it?
It's James Aaron Toole Missing Persons.
Okay. James Aaron Toole Missing Persons.
Mm-hmm.
And I suggest everyone check that out on Facebook.
Yes, please do.
I think more importantly, I think most people can figure out that he's pretty much, since the vehicle hasn't been found, and it's probably, more than likely not, a homicide or foul play at this point, that, he would be in water. And I don't think it even takes a psychic to kind of figure that one out. But also,
right,
the years that the river has existed and the multiple currents that flow through that river, and I know because we've searched it many a time for other people, number one, he's not going to be right near a landing where he possibly would have gone off, because everybody knows it takes, several minutes for a car to finally sink. During that floating process, it gets caught in currents and under, and it ends up way down the river if it gets caught in a tow during its floating process before it actually
mm-hmm.
sinks, which means mm-hmm. the older cars, especially back in the 90s, took a good amount of time as well to sink, not as much as the ones nowadays because they're so much lighter, but they had more, it's studying all of that, the current flow, how long it would actually take that particular vehicle to actually sink. These are things that
wow.
there's experts out there that will consult and figure that out, and then talk to not only people that work that river and people that are involved in the agriculture of that river, but also talk
mm-hmm.
to people that have been in the area numerous years that will tell you. You'll always find that person that knows about that body of water, and they'll say, I've been living here 50-something years, and every person that's ever drowned came out over here, or every person that's ever went in came out over there. And those are the things, in addition to the scientific part that you research, you want to listen to those people, and then it takes, experienced people that will put this kind of stuff together and estimate the design travel and figure out where you need to begin that search. We all know that even if you went in by that landing, more than likely that vehicle is nowhere near that land. So it could be a significant amount of time, a significant amount of area that car had even traveled in water. I've seen it time and time again where it could be way down that river. So, like they said, it's going to take more than one search because, and it's going to take a good sonar. You can't just go out there with
exactly.
It's going to take like the Centron or something like that can go in 200-foot depth
mm-hmm.
of water and that
mm-hmm.
you can see very good. And then also you have to question who's reading that sonar, because I've been on searches where there's been officials conducting the sonar while we were working boats with dogs, and they went right over the vehicle because they didn't really know how to read the sonar. And once it was reread three days later, they're like, we need to go back to that body of water because I see an image.
Oh.
And they're like, well, we never saw it. you know, and that
happened. Oh, my goodness. I never thought about that. You just kind of always trust the people who have the equipment to know what they're doing with it.
A lot of the equipment is grant written, and a lot of people get the equipment, you know, and I'm not saying most majority of people, they take classes to learn how to run it, but how good is the sonar is as good as the tech running it as well. So, you know, those
exactly.
are some of the questions. What kind of sonar was used? You know, in even in the initial searches that may took place for him, what kind of sonar was used? You know, what's the experience or the level of the person running the sonar? You know, these are all questions. It's just like somebody has a dog, doesn't mean they're a good canine handler. It doesn't mean anything about the dog either. You have to know what are their certifications, what's their experience level, who have they found? Have they ever found anyone? You know, that kind of thing. These are all questions
right.
we ask, you know.
Right.
Because trust, people
and,
show up on search all the time, and
mm-hmm.
it doesn't mean just because they got a boat, they know how to drive it.
That's very true. And I hate to go back again to the case that I am working on, because I don't want to divert from Ashley and Amanda, but actually the car was found, this person and the car were found in the river, and they only found it after they had started to drain the river because they were going to fix the dam, and it became visible. So there's always hope.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I believe that in every case. Some of these, you know, I wish I could live everywhere that we have a case for at least the first month that person became missing, because then you would live and breathe that case and you would know all your facts and establish all your facts instead of going back, you know, 8, 10, 5 years later and asking questions that should, you know, at the very beginning, or even doing should have been done at the very beginning. You know, but that's the one good thing, that cold cases do have an advantage. There's so much that never was done, that you always have a lot to do right away. And we solved a 28-year-old case down in Florida and in 11 months, just because we picked it up and we ran with it. So, you know, I know it can be done. I've done it myself with cases. And although it remains unsolved homicide, we at least got the girl and we got her back home for proper burial.
That's wonderful. That is just wonderful.
Well, and that's
go ahead.
No, I was just saying that's what people need. They want the resolution. I don't believe there's closure to any kind of tragedy. I think, you know, I think we grow and heal, but the resolution can be a finalization that helps us get to the next day, because now you know where that person is and they get back home, and then you know they're home and you can move on to the next phase of healing, if you will. But they can't ever heal, because they can't heal from something that's unknown, which is the whereabouts of the missing person.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's no closure. I don't think there's any such thing. But my goodness, you to actually have somewhat of a closure when you find this person, and like you say, a proper burial. And again, Ashley, Amanda, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Just that, you know, if anybody knows anything, I mean, even if, like, you think it's insignificant, you know, just, you know, let anything that you may remember that you may not have thought was important, just even if you don't think it's important, just share it, and hopefully it could lead to something, because right now we don't have anything. So
exactly.
Just anybody
and
information.
If anybody has anything, this was May 15th, 1995, in Pansy, Alabama. Am I pronouncing that correctly, Pansy?
Right.
And it's the Houston County Sheriff's Department at 334-677-4888. And thank you, my dears, for being on the show with me tonight. I am so glad you called in, and God bless you. And you've got a great person in Monica and her team and in the Q Center for the Missing.
Thank you for having us.
And if you want to stay on the line, you're welcome to stay on the line and listen to the rest of the show.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Monica.
Yes.
Are you? Okay. That is such a story. It's just unbelievable. I just, what wonderful, wonderful young ladies. I am so glad that they've taken up the torch for the for their grandpa. And it's just wonderful. And
yes,
I know that
is.
You'll
and,
be a huge help.
Well, like I said, you know, once we get the tour past us, you know, that's the first step. We're trying to get that information out there on a lot of these cases. But once we get the tour over, we'll be back out on the ground again. The only time, two times a year that we take off as far as search-wise, which we still have other teams still going down, but our major time that we reflect is during the road tour and our national conference that we host every March. So the road tour comes every fall.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's our national awareness and our education month is March and in the fall with a tour. So, you know, just trying to, you know, continue to get the word out, visiting all these small towns of people that you've never heard of.
Right. Exactly. I have to ask you, are you going to be in Wisconsin?
Not this year, but we definitely have that on the books for next year. Every year we pick a different route. Last year we went, we flew the whole road for last year out to California, and we did California, Oregon, Washington State, you know, all of that run. And we spent, you know, almost about a week and a half out there just visiting towns. And, you know, we have rally stops and hundreds of people that participate in every leg of the tour. And this year we're going, we're leaving up to Virginia, over to Indiana. Then we're coming back down the side of Tennessee. And then we're hitting, you know, like Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, coming across the whole southern region there. And then we're literally doing an entire route around Florida, on the outskirts of Florida, outlining the state, and coming back through South Carolina before we return to North Carolina on October, which will be our grand finale.
That's wonderful. And I'm assuming you've already set up some media?
Oh, yeah. We have
good.
We have a crew that works on, you know, pounding the media the entire time that we're on. Dedicated volunteers that continue the facts ahead of us constantly. We'll start mm-hmm. sending press releases out in the next 10 days, you know, already prior to the tour even departing in October. You know, we'll release the route, which will have all of our stops, and there'll be numerous people that will come to, you know, part of the tour, the past people and whatnot. So we always anticipate, you know, more people needing our help, but also bringing awareness to a lot of people that we won't even know until we get to that particular stop as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it just, I kind of want to rewind a little bit, but then again, what you've just, I mean, it just says it all, what you've just said, but the expansion of the Q Center after, you know, you struggled to define your mission and you had Carr's case and then there was an expansion because you weren't, like I said in my introduction, that wasn't always you. You know, you weren't always
a national center,
right? It wasn't always,
right.
But the organization was not always this big. So, how did you expand it?
Well, just a lot of growth over the years. Like I said, we really saw the need. People started reaching out from all over when we worked a Peggy Carr case from other states, and we felt like, wow, these are so many people that didn't have help, and we knew we could help them. So then came the challenge of funds to get there, because we raise all of our money. Nobody takes a paycheck, including myself, and we raise all of our funds to get to the next search. And so, you know, we've had request after request come in, so we decided that we would offer, you know, national services, but the cases have to be registered with us. And because we work very on hand and on the ground, in other words, when mm-hmm. we get cases, we're meeting with their investigators, we're meeting with the families, we're going to their hometowns, we're scouting out, we're coming up with a plan, whether it be awareness plan to kick it off. Some cases we're right on the ground immediately searching. Other cases, we have to build that awareness to get information to get to a search. So we're constantly, I mean, I write 6 and 7 search plans a week, you know, for cases. And, you know, I multitask about 30 families a day.
talking on the phone myself, not including all the caseworkers now that we've established that have been with us, you know, 10 and 15 years. A lot of our volunteers come, you know, come to our organization, and because of them being solid volunteers and people that have grown with the organization and know the organization inside out, they've been the backbone and have me, you know, continue to grow. And then in 2010, I decided we had so many volunteers nationwide, we decided to launch an official state outreach coordinators program, meaning that people could come in and come to the training every March. And then we would do webinars once a month, actually training the people of all that we know, providing them with all of our contacts. Wonderful. And so now it's just taken off. We started with 14 states and I think 27 directors the first year. And this year I just inducted 40 directors, and we're at, I think, 18 states now represented. And my five-year goal plan is to have, you know, four representatives in each state so we can better serve the people and seek more funding to help these people on the ground behind the scenes and in search avenues.
Oh my gosh, it's wonderful.
Oh, so it's growing, but it's been a long growth pattern, which I like, because I always feel like the longer it takes to grow, the more solid your ground is. You know, if you grow too fast, too quick, your ground's not real solid underneath you. So we've
right.
built that solid ground and solid people along the way, and it's taken us, we're going to celebrate, you know, our anniversary coming up September 22nd, and we've been here a long time. You know, I think it'd be 18 or 19 years now we've been doing this, but I feel we're at a very large crest in the organization, and we're doing better every year, gaining more support, more donors, more professional searchers, because we started networking that many years ago. Have over 10,000 people in our database that are resources, that are professional trained resources, that, you know, I can go to Missouri and have 150 people there waiting on me. I can go to, you know, Minnesota, wherever I have to go, and I can summon those people to get there, and our organization funds those searches, so it takes that relief off of law enforcement and no excuse of why they can't support a search even in a cold case, because they're not
exactly for it. Exactly.
So,
yep.
It's a pretty easy concept at the end of the day, and
yeah,
it's worked, you
it
know.
Is.
And
yeah.
And we have good relations with law enforcement all across the country. We're very well respected, and we have a very good training for our people that are involved, and we also throughout the year offer them continuous training to, you know, whatever they want and things that to better them in their field, whether it be canine or whatnot. So, you know, we feel really good about where we're at right now. We know once we complete our database and what have you, we're going to be way further along than we even are now, because we just started databasing for the last 2 years trying to get, you know, the volunteers and all of our contacts in one central place, and then we've got bids out right now that we're getting ready to create a database that will actually track volunteers by not only region, but age and race and specialties that they provide and hours that they provide for our organization.
I was wondering, do you compare or do you have someone who compares the John Doe's or the unidentifieds with your missing persons?
Can you say again? I'm sorry.
Do you have someone who compares the John Doe's with your missing persons?
Yes. Every Wednesday within our organization, we have a team of volunteers. That's all they do is they constantly looking at, you know, Jane and John Doe's across the nation to match up with our cases. Sometimes we'll come across cases that aren't ours, and we forward that on to the investigators. But we primarily are trying to seek out our cases that are registered and trying to solve them because, you know, our registered, so they're our first priority.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes,
every Wednesday is our
Doe Day. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's fantastic. What a wonderful organization. Oh, my God. Well, is there anything else we'd like to add tonight? I'm losing my voice very quickly.
know that, you know, if you have, again, you know, I want to, you know, the girls were saying earlier in the broadcast that, you know, if anybody has information on any missing person, you know, to call it in to law enforcement or to submit it, you know, anonymously, you know, off of our website there, you know, we will, we will make sure that gets to law enforcement, because the littlest piece of information, even if you think it's not important, could be put together with something already known in the investigation. It can be the world of moving that investigation.
Exactly. And again, that's www.n as in Nancy, C as in Cindy, missingpersons.org. So please, if you have any tips at all, bring them in, because it's small. It's the smallest little thing that maybe have been kind of nagging at you in the back of your head. It's, and you think, oh, it's ridiculous. No, please call it in. I want to thank my guests tonight. Monica, you are so special and near and dear to my heart, and the work that you do is near and dear to my heart. And I thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, I appreciate you helping us to get the word out down here. And I appreciate, you know, you taking time for not only unsolved and homicides, but missing people. It's important that everybody work together.
Exactly. And it's my pleasure. And Ashley and Amanda, God bless you, young ladies. You just keep on trucking, because you'll get somewhere. Thank you so much, you two, for being on the show. Thanks to my public relations team at ImaginePublicity.com. Our next show will be next Tuesday. Tune in as we continue to analyze cases that wreak havoc on families looking for answers and seeking justice, and discuss crime-related topics with the experts. To hear a rebroadcast of tonight's show, go to www.crimewire.blogspot.com. Turn on the volume at your computer, and the show will automatically play. And please join me next Tuesday at 2:30 Pacific Time and 5:30 Eastern for Robert George Allen's show, Ghosts and Gangsters, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Until next time, God bless and stay safe. Good night, everybody.